This episode of Cooking Issues is brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, an employee-owned company that has been offering organic stone-ground products for decades.
Their flours and whole grains are the highest quality and are minimally processed at their stone mill in Oregon.
Visit bobsredmill.com to shop their huge range of products. Use the code COOKINGISSUES, that's one word, all caps, COOKINGISSUES, for 25% off your order. Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday from like roughly 12 to like roughly 12:45, 1 o'clock from Bernard's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Today we have BDF Screw in the house.
Plus Nastasia, the Hammer Lopez, and Dave in the booth.
She counts as BDX Crew.
It's true.
BDX bar crew. When I say BDX crew, I mean BDX bar. Yeah.
He always forgets I helped him open the bar.
Oh, man. So, calling all of your BDX cocktail-related questions to 718-497-2128. That's 718-497-2128. Since we have a rather large... Oh, by the way, the reason we're doing this BDX reunion now is because I've wanted to do it for a long time, and we're about to open... It's not Booker and Dax, and... Everyone here has gone on, except for the one person who's going to work with me in this group. Has gone on to do very interesting things. So this is in advance of the new bar existing conditions opening.
It's coming, we promise.
That's Jack Schramm, our once and future head bartender.
I can never escape Dave, and I would never choose to.
All right, let's. so let's go. Why don't we start with you, Jack? We'll go around the room. We'll say who's in here, and then we'll just get going.
Sure. Hi, it's Jack Schramm, the future head bartender of Existing Conditions, former barback at Booker and Dax, also bartender, head bartender.
Hello, this is Robbie Nelson. I was the general manager of Booker and Dax very early on, and now working with Plymouth Gin and Pernod Ricard.
My name is Nicholas Bennett. I was the former bar captain at Booker and Dax, and now I'm the head bartender at Porchlight, part of Union Square Hospitality Group.
When you say Porchlight in your head, do you sing it in Neil Diamond voice?
Always. Just every single time.
My name is Donnie Clutterbuck, and I used to work at Booker and Dax. Now I am the head bartender at Cure, one of the many Cures in Rochester, New York. And you can't trademark that name because it's a common word, so everybody uses it. And now I travel around and talk about spreadsheets and citrus fruit.
Well, also, your USBG, all that other stuff, right?
Yeah. I mean, how long do we have, right?
I don't know. Just tell them what you do.
I'm the founder and president of the Rochester USBG chapter. I own an app called Pour Cost, which is a way to find out what it costs you to serve things from a milliliter bottle in ounces at dollars at a percentage for free. And what else do I do?
I don't know.
I drink coffee in the morning and coffee at night.
Nice.
And that's
we need an app that's just pork cost. It's cost of every cut of pork.
Pork cost. How much does your pork cost you?
Yeah. What if I turn it into ham?
Hello, I'm Felipe, former resident beautiful boy at Booker and Dax, currently bartending at Blacktail.
Hey, I'm Derek Cram. I was part of the last generation at Booker and Dax, now at PDT.
Yeah. Stacy Swenson, a former bartender at Booker and Dax, at Dante and Dante at Genuine, where I'm the head bartender, and creative consultant for Simple Serve and general party time good haver.
Now, Dante at Genuine, unrelated to Genuine the rapper.
Well, not technically unrelated to the...
Different spellings, though.
Affiliated by enjoyment.
Yes. We'll just talk about things. We already have a BDX question. Someone wants to know some specs. I'm sure everyone's going to ask specs. If anyone calls in, they're just going to have us shoot the breeze here, which is also fine. But I figured we'd make a drink. So, sorry, not Pernod Ricard on this one, but Heaven Hill came and did a tasting, and they left us a bottle of... it's just going to show you how the mentality works at the old Booker and Dax mentality. Hopefully we keep this mentality. So they show up and they show us this Sacred Bond, American brandy, which is good and a good price.
Yeah.
And of course, I just run around the room saying, word is bond, girls, I'm sugared, running around like an idiot, calling the spirit word is bond and not ever saying the word sacred. And then we're tasting it. And I think Jack and I both look at it. It was like, why in all of the years we never made ourselves a milk wash sidecar? What?
What were we thinking?
Yeah, first of all, like, sidecar is one of those drinks, and you guys will, you know, disagree with me, of course, because you're humans. But sidecar is one of those drinks that I always want to love a lot, and I never quite love it a lot. And I know all of you who know me know that I have an issue with, like, heavy wood, heavy acid on a shake. And so, you know, the yak. Anyway, so we're not using yak on this because standard sidecar is, of course, yak. Do the classic specs have added simple syrup, or is it just Cointreau, yak, and lemon?
That's like the original Daisy.
And by the way, garbagey spec. It's a garbage.
It needs simple.
Yeah, it needs simple. It needs simple. Yeah, file that under the long list of garbage classic specs that no one makes.
2-1-1, you monster.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, it's bad people, just terrible people. Anyway, so we milk washed some of the it's sacred bond, not word, sacred bond. We milk washed some of that. I should say that's why I was late, because I was at the new bar milk washing. So I milk washed that, and I have a new thing for all of you. So one of the things we did at Booker and Dax a lot was acid adjusting, right? We would take our juices and we would adjust them. Up to the acidity of lemon or lime juice. But so we were working actually for a new drink at the bar, the celery drink.
Yeah.
And I thought, I was like, you know, I kind of want just more citrus, more. So I was like, well, why have we never done OJ into simple syrup? So this is now OJ into simple syrup. So we have OJ turned into simple syrup, lemon juice. So instead of replacing the quinch with OJ syrup, and we're also, by the way, so I'll tell you a couple little secrets here. For calculating Brix adjusting up to simple syrup, this recipe only works for adjusting to 1-to-1 simple syrup. If you want to adjust to any other Brix, you must, by the way, Brix just means percentage sugar by weight. Anyway, deal with
it. Yeah, so it's not just equal parts sugar and juice. It is Brix adjusted to 50.
Right, Brix adjusted to 50. So here's how you do it. You look up on the internets, or if you have a refractometer, as we do, you look up the Brix of the thing you have, and here's the magic formula. If you want any other ratio, any other, like, you know, Brix, if you want to do 2-to-1 simple syrup, then you're on your own. Go figure out the math. But just multiply the Brix by 2 and subtract that from 100. So orange juice is 11.8 Brix. That's 23.6. Subtract from 100 is 76.4. Some of that. So that formula always works. So then if you have 100 grams of OJ, you add 76 and change grams of sugar, and you're good. Very simple formula. Just multiply the Brix by 2, subtract from 100. Multiply by 2.
Assuming you're starting with 100 grams, scale up accordingly.
Well, everything's by 100. Yeah, everything's by hundreds. By the 100 weight. Not the ice company. The 100 weight. Nothing against the ice company. I'm just saying, unrelated.
All right, Dave, before I make this, how about we open one of our bottled specialties that
Let's do it.
And what? Surprise for
you. Oh, awesome. So, what, Jack, tell them what you're opening here.
So, the first thing we're going to open is one of our Booker and Dax bottled Manhattans. This one happened to be bottled on July 10th, 2015. It's been in my freezer. Well, it actually traveled with me to New Orleans for the CAP program in 2015, and I never opened it because we were so liquored up the whole week. You know, it's tough. So I just brought it home and jammed it in my freezer until an opportune moment,
so
such as this one.
For 2 or 3 years, not frozen, but
You know, fridge, freezer. You know, it's been freezer, in a chilled fresh environment, except for the time it was in my suitcase and then in a mini bar fridge for 6 days.
I still have a bottle of chartreuse lying around, but I don't know where it is.
It's at the bar.
Okay. by the way, for those of you that you know, all of you obviously are family, and I hope to see you at the new bar on a constant basis, but. Remember, we used to store all of our bottled drinks and our carbo drinks in these refrigerators, and they were a real pain in the behind from a service standpoint because they would rattle and move in and out. Remember, our glasses used to fall off and shatter, and then, like, they would go out of temperature, and then people wouldn't put the stuff back in, and I would start screaming and yelling. Remember this?
Yeah.
So, at the new place, we could talk about this because they printed it in the newspaper, we're going to have vending machines. And the vending machines are going to keep it at exactly the temperature. And so we're going to have bottled stuff behind the bar, too. But people who want to order it can literally just plop a token in the vending machine and yank the drinks. How sick is that?
That's awesome.
It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. We can't do the Bennett martini because we need something new. Well, maybe we'll make some Bennett martinis.
Bennett martini is that one, right? The 3/8, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
What olive did you use in that? Was that we're gonna share this, right?
Start. We've got two glasses.
Start with steak bone.
So we're gonna.
All right, we'll go around. And we'll meet in the middle. So we could talk about bottled cocktails if anyone cares about bottled cocktails. One more thing I'm going to say about the fake sidecar. We'll need, if we like it, which I have no idea, I'm making the classic mistake that, what's his name? Thomas Keller yelled at me for, which making something I've never made before in front of a bunch of people is like, you're an idiot. You're stupid. I'm like, well, thanks. I'll take that. But we're going to shake it with an orange because we don't have shake ice and I don't have the BDX cocktail cubes. Because whenever I do a demonstration, like somewhere else abroad, I bring a BDX cocktail cube with me and then invariably I give it to the person who I'm working with at the event. So I don't have any. So you can get the same. The cocktail cube is something to add the texture of shake ice. And by the way, you can get that texture by shaking with a large piece of citrus in your tin. But if you do it, you're infringing on my patent, and I will sue you.
But if the drink is no good, you know, everybody has to shake a drink with an orange.
Well, it does actually add a little bit of... Instagram. It does add a little bit of like zest flavor, which I also enjoy. Still good. Still tastes good.
Great.
How many of these do you want me to make? Should I just make one so we can see if it's good and then make more if it is good?
Yeah, do you have this? Do you have the salt? I brought the salt.
You brought the salt?
Yeah,
oh, perfect.
Nice. All right, yeah, make one. So the question for you guys, now you're all, you know, I know where your relative palates are, and you know where my relative palate is. How close to 3/4 do you want to get on this?
I'm doing, like, fat half.
Fat half? Are you guys okay with fat half?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm okay with
that. Taste the word milk wash word is bond. It's good. It's light. One of the issues with wooded spirits for me is that they get, especially in shaken cocktails, when they're extra diluted and extra cold, gets that woody. So if you milk wash, it's Jack just took a pull straight out the bottle. All right, cool. All right, so we're shaking with an orange, infringing on my own patent, and mixing it. So
I don't think that's how that works.
What? Nastasia, why do you have my phone, by the way?
I was texting David from
All right, because I need to look. Why don't you read me the question?
Hey, what's
up?
Question.
Well, do we have any callers, by the way?
This Dave, do you want me to keep the sticker on the orange when I shake with it?
That's the added flavor, and it's a sign that I washed them beforehand.
Dave, I'm waiting for a caller. We had a guy who called in twice before you got here. So
really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, such is life. Such is life. All right, so we had a question. This is about sauce. Any of you guys cook sauces? No?
Yes.
No. Asking a group of bartenders about cooking sauce. What about, I was in a place recently where half the menu spelled sauce like sauce, and the rest of the menu spelled sauce like sauce. Sauce.
Was there a definitional difference between the two? Or no?
I think so. Like, it seemed like sauce was cooler. It was just a mistranslation, but definitely sauce was what I wanted. You know what I mean? And they had a dish called, what was it called? Super Mix Shops?
Super Mix Shops.
Super Mix Shops. Oh. So here's my concept. You ready? We take lamb chop. We got to get different sizes, but pork, lamb, beef, and then we meat glue them into a super chop. Low temperature it. Keep the pork on the outside so that it cooks higher. Pork, then I guess lamb, then beef. And then, or maybe like pork, lamb, beef, pork, so that the, you know, thinner. And then that's a super mixed chop, and of course served with sauce.
The Manhattan was delicious, by the way. It perfectly preserved thanks to the magic of liquid nitrogen. I'm going to taste this word as bond sidecar.
Yeah.
Want to take a call?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, hello. It's delicious.
Okay, yes. Caller, you're on the air. We have to come up with a name, hello, caller, for this drink if we actually like it. I was thinking something California-based. Is there an Easy Rider cocktail?
There is now.
Easy Rider.
Because did he have a sidecar on his motorcycle?
Of course not. He was completely unsocialized. He didn't like people. Like, why would he want another person with him on his bike? Anyway, go ahead.
Hi, my friend. This is Dana Corey.
Hey, my friend! All right. Dana Corey, also from Booker and Dax.
Yes.
My question is, what's your fascination with dairy, man?
My fascination with dairy? Okay, Dana Corey.
Tell the story.
Dana Corey, well-known, afraid of milk. Like, afeared of milk. And this being a family show, I cannot tell you the story, but if Dana comes over to Existing Conditions sometime after we open and anyone who can hear our voices comes, we will tell you the story of Dana Corey and milk. By the way, the interesting thing about this story is that this is a story that could make someone afraid of milk who was not already afraid of milk. But Dana showed up with already with a fear of milk. It's like Indiana Jones already afraid of snakes, gets dropped into the snake pit. It's horrific. That's good.
Yeah, it's real good.
That tastes good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very
easy rider. How you doing, Dana?
I'm doing great. Wonderful. Excited to see the new bar. You know, just waiting for my chance to pop in.
Yeah. Dana, you live in the great land of mozzarella, but true or false, I can tell relatively recent, Hoboken, by the way.
Oh, much.
Yeah, but until recently, though, you didn't, you weren't, like, down with how good your mozzarella was, right?
Oh, yeah, it's the best.
The best. Even you like it even though it's dairy, correct?
Yeah. I can actually get down with that. I have breakfast with Robbie Nelson from time to time, and I even have put milk in my coffee. He's witnessed it.
Well, you're just getting better and better, man.
All right.
Getting better and better. See, so one of my favorite things, because Dana is formerly was at Miami, is we like talking about the bath salts murderer. Remember the bath salts?
Oh, yes.
Did he murder that guy or just eat his face? Did that guy survive?
There were several, right?
I don't know. I don't think I'd want to make it through that. But,
bath salts.
I think he lived.
Bath salts. Yeah, the E.T. lived.
You don't need a face.
No, the E.T.O.R. got shot to death. The E.T.O.R. died.
Yes.
He was shot to death. Yeah, bath salts. Yeah. Miami. Give me some Miami. And also, Dana and I both have a love, stupid love, inappropriate love for Quad City DJs, I think. At least he indulges me with my love of the Quad City DJs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Come on, ride the train. Choo-choo ride. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
Definitely excited to see you at the bar. Want to come check you out and, you know, have a little fun.
Nice. All right, come by. We won't make you drink milk.
All right.
Although, we now have cream syrup on the menu. And we
We have new technology, though. So here's the thing.
One of the problems I had at Booker and Dax pissed me off. Pissed me off for like was that no one would get the pumps so we could pump cream syrup and butter. We're not going to bring the cold butter syrup. Are we back? That was Dana's
least favorite.
Dana, that scared the crap out of you.
I never worked with Dana, but I would always hear about once the managers left how he would actively 86 nitro muddle drinks.
No, we're out of that. No, don't have that.
The lavender drink. Just the lavender.
My other favorite Dana thing, and I wasn't actually there for it. I missed it by a couple of hours. Was we very, very rarely had to throw people out of Booker and Dax.
Oh my God, I remember that.
We had a good crowd. Someone came in and touched one of the crew. Like someone came in and touched one of a female crew member. And
like kicked Danks, I think.
Really?
I think it was. Yeah.
He leapt from behind the bar, picked up this human, and threw him like garbage onto the street.
Super impressive.
Yeah, he was good.
But I could just see that, like no facial. I could see Dana with no facial expression at all, just being like, nah. And then just like coming from around the bar and just like hurling this dude out onto the street. Amazing. Good times.
Good times.
Hey, Dana, are you familiar in Hoboken with the Clam Broth House sign?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, here we go.
Clam Broth House, man. Righty. Clam Broth, right?
Hey, you got your Clam Broth.
There's one that's here, and there's one here.
There's one over there, and there's one right here. Get your Clam Broth.
All stevedores, 50% off.
Yeah. I totally want that Clam Broth House sign, man. We got to steal that some gun.
Well, we got to build a Clam Broth cannon before we have the sign.
Hey, we'll work on that.
Yeah, you got to steal that for me, Dana. And the other thing is that, partner in crime, Don Lee, evil cocktail overlord, who could not be here today because we have a tasting with press, you know, opening business. So he's like, no one likes clam broth, and I won't serve it at the bar. I'm like, dude, clam broth is like clam chowder minus everything Dana hates, minus the milk. It's like clam chowder minus the stuff you don't like.
Make a Bloody Mary out of that.
There you go. I think it's hot, though, man. That'd be like kind of nasty.
We got to build the hot broth cannon.
Do you guys remember at Booker and Dax? Every year we were invited for the Bloody Mary contest. Every year we did something conceptual, and every year we lost. We once did the hot tomato soup Bloody Mary and served it with a grilled cheese sandwich.
Yep.
I recall.
Yeah.
And I had to track down Kraft Singles cheese in a snowstorm. It was great.
Except no other. But it was cold as hell, and we're serving, like, grilled cheese sandwiches, and we still didn't lose because they're like, it doesn't taste like a Bloody Mary. Duh.
It tastes better.
It's better. It's a grilled cheese sandwich. Who doesn't like, if you can eat cheese, you like a grilled cheese sandwich, right?
That's a fact.
Yeah, I mean, that's just straight delicious. Straight delicious. All right. So wait, stay on in case anyone has it.
All right, by the way, Dana. Another caller on the line,
Actually. I want another caller, but Dana, also goes to these very kind of not well-known, like, cultural things on Cape Cod. Are you allowed to describe those, or are those super secret?
No, what cultural things?
The special, like, events where people beat the crap out of each other at Cape Cod.
Oh, Fireball. Yeah, yeah, Fireball.
Yeah, yeah. So talk about this.
Oh, yeah, Fireball.
It's a, once the sun sets. Oh,
you guys are going to like this. This is, yeah.
At the powwow.
In Mashpee, right?
A lot of Native family. Yeah. They play this game. They gather everyone together, and they have two opposing teams just in young males. It's kind of like a ritual ceremony. And they light this damn ball on fire. It's a barbed wire ball that's lit on fire. And you have to get it from one end of the post, which is also lit on fire, to the other end. So, yeah, there's a lot of burnt hands. Everyone's hands looks like Mickey Mouse at the end of the event because it's all swollen. It's all cut up.
And that's close to
chest everywhere. It's just a ball of fire just flying around. So
it's close to Mashpee, right?
Go
it's close
that. Every single year, yeah, Mashpee.
Mashpee, the best name ever. So, do you have like a motor? Are you on a motorcycle right now? But a motorcycle or some sort of a thing. So, what would you eat and drink while you were throwing fireballs at each other in Mashpee?
Turtle soup.
Turtle soup. Yeah, so anyway, anytime I drive by Mashpee, I'm like, Mashpee, and Booker's like, not funny, Dad. That's how it goes. Anyway, someday you'll invite me, I'll go, and I'll get someone throwing a flaming ball at me, and I will light on fire again, although I hope to never light on fire again. That's my sincere opinion.
No. Yeah, bet. We'll be there. The only thing is that they're strict about filming, because it's a very ritualistic thing, but yeah, definitely bring the boys, bring the family. And we'll be down there this 4th of July checking it out.
Oh, 4th of July? I don't know. We'll talk about it. You talk. You come to the bar, you talk. All right.
Yes, sir. I talk.
All right, cool. Dave, we got, who do we got?
We got another caller on the line.
All right, caller, you're on the air. What's up?
Hey, how are you? Woodward, long time, first time. I'm actually from London, but I now live in Boston and spend an inordinate amount of time at Mashpee Commons, and I've never seen what your last contributor talked about. But that aside, my question is, I've recently fallen in love with Negroni,
okay.
And I was at the American Bar in the Savoy in London, and he sold me on a mezcal Negroni, which was actually rather good. My question is, what else can we make a Negroni out of, dropping the gin and subbing it for something else?
Okay, wait, this is perfect because we have Stacey Swenson here.
I'm gonna give you your time, Stacey. But let me just say one thing. Like, I am...
Yo, I'm gonna let you finish, bud.
I'm gonna let you finish. Yeah. I'm gonna give you time. But like, my issue is that like, and we can have this argument after we hear the answer. But is it really a Negroni still, or is it a different drink? I got into almost a knockdown fight at the last bar meeting I had because I was like, every damn drink, according to you, every damn stir drink is a freaking Manhattan. Every freaking thing. It's either a Manhattan or a martini. I got in a huge fight. Anyway,
it's a highball.
No. All right, so go ahead. Go Negroni.
Okay. I don't think we need to be so strict about what we call Negroni, but whatever. There are many schools of thoughts, I guess. I guess that the Negroni is just a building block for a cocktail, just like a Manhattan would be, right? So I think a Manhattan and a martini would be the same building blocks, right? And a Negroni is a different thing. It's pretty much exactly the same drink. Yeah, we definitely stretch our imaginations a little bit when we're building Negronis, and you can pretty much literally use any base spirit, and if you switch up your bitters and your vermouth, you can make it taste good. It's really hard to make it not taste good.
Basca Drapar.
That's the beauty of the Negroni.
I personally think that Campari kind of won the fight for the Negroni. I think you can now make a Negroni with any three parts, as long as there's a strong, a sweet, and then Campari.
So,
why does it need to be Campari though? There's so many red bitters out there that you can.
I agree. I'm just from a branding perspective. I think Campari kind
of. Well, of course,
has been fighting that fight,
and Campari is delicious.
Well, I get this question a lot when people ask. Well, I thought a Negroni has to have Campari. I don't know. Like, does it? Who makes these laws?
No, I think Aperol is a legit. Still legit, less alcoholic, sweeter, less bitter.
Sure, but we've got Luxardo bitter, Contrato bitter. Like, there's several other.
Do you carry that? Do you carry the Luxardo?
Yeah.
Do you use the Luxardo?
Yeah, we use it in our Boulevard EA.
Why? Like, why that as opposed to a different one?
Why?
I mean, do they pay you?
It's almost as if they did R&D and then decided it's the one they like.
Sure, that's the...
I'm just saying, like, I don't know enough about it, honestly, because we never carried it, right? Oh, sorry.
It's a decision that came a little bit before I was there, but there's a reason why we use each bitter and each cocktail. We also want to keep, you know, a variety on the menu.
I mean, I know for me, a lot of times it's I use that because they literally paid for an event, and then I don't want to change it because we wrote the spec with that.
Sure, that might come up in sort of some decision making.
Caller, yes, how close are we to answering your question?
Oh my God!
Say that again, caller.
Yeah, you're turning into Darth Vader. Or. Your robot voice.
It sounds like he's going through a Sears all right.
I wouldn't want to add that if you're going to use a base spirit that's as intense as mezcal, then maybe lighten up your bitter a little bit, and so use something like Aperol or maybe like Cappelletti or something mezcal's that's not as intense. Unless you really want, like, a punch-in-your-face kind of cocktail, which I think a Mezcal Negroni is.
Mezcal is a huge range, though. It can range from, like, super light to, like, super hardcore. Mr. Del Maguey, do you have any comments on this? There's also, like, would you at least agree? Steak bone, would you at least agree?
Well, I would say Mezcal.
You know. Well, for Vita, so if you're going to use a Mezcal, that's cost-effective in a cocktail. Right, and I think most of them are super smoky, the ones that are... like Vita, for example.
What about mixed base? Mezcal tequila mixed base. I like a mixed base.
All right, Phil Ward.
Felipe doesn't like a mixed base. Hey.
Hey.
Hey. No, to lighten it up in a drink. To lighten it, you know. But you also agree, like, you like white. You still like a white spirit, not like an aged spirit in a Negroni, right? Or no? You're like, oh, I could do anything.
I
can't. Anything.
And with an aged spirit, it's just a ball of
I'm right yeah, so. Now.
What about a Kingston Negroni?
Yes. What's that?
Jamaican rum.
What yeah, kind of Jamaican rum?
Smith and Gross.
Jamaica, right?
Yeah.
Isn't it made somewhere else?
Smith and Gross?
It was like a London. Didn't it say like London on it or something?
It does say it does say London it's rum a, or yeah, something like
it's
that.
It's
right?
Back to distilled on the island, aged in warehouses. Yeah. You know, it's a historical.
I don't care where it's from. It's delicious. It doesn't really matter.
We'll call Wondrich. We'll get to the bar.
Yeah, sure.
Have we answered your question? Basically, Campari and vermouth mixed with things taste good in almost any ratio.
You yeah. And you totally answered my question. And my final follow-on was, what do you reckon? One big cube of ice, lots of ice, or just straight up? What's the right etiquette?
Wait. I'm going to give you a 4-beat. How much of your cocktail is left?
Right.
Yeah. So, well, like,
very, I mean, I would down it. That's just me.
Then you don't need ice. Just serve it up in a chilled glass.
I mean, stir it on ice it first to.
I thought he meant service wise.
Yeah. Service wise, but I'm just saying.
If you're gonna be like yakety 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 yakety, then serve it on a big cube. Big cube. Mm-hmm. The trick is Negroni doesn't like being too warm. Correct.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's like that's one of the problems.
I gotta say, Dave. I'm less yakety-yak, more drinkety-drink. So great answer. Yeah. Great show. Perfect. Keep it up. Thank you. Oh,
thank you. And by the way, people, never, ever, never, ever order a double anything. Just say, give me one now and make me one in exactly 3 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, that's
like
the correct answer.
Every drink is a double now.
Dave, I just spoke to the bartender inside at Roberta's. He said he substitutes Sue's for the Campari.
Oh, Sue's.
In a mezcal Negroni.
Love a white Negroni.
Sue's, like, which one of you is a Sue's freak? Anne Robinson's a Sue's freak.
I love
right?
Sue's.
We're all Sue's freaks.
Yeah.
He's making me one right now, so.
You dirty. Oh, why? Because we didn't make you a drink.
Yeah, that's right.
It's not too late. I'll
still have more. So we're going to make you a whatever we're going to call. Do we like Easy Rider? What do we like for names? I'm always terrible at naming things.
Sleazy Rider.
Let's take a break real
quick. How about
while we
Gentle
can.
Rider?
Dave, quick break while we got on our mic.
We'll take a break. We'll come back with more cooking issues. This episode episode of Cooking Issues is brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, an employee-owned company that has been offering organic stone-ground products for decades.
Dave, we have a question from Kat this week. I've seen the Searsol being used to caramelize sugars on brulees and other desserts. What type of sugars work the best?
Okay, well, I sincerely encourage you to all go purchase Searsols on Amazon.com. I actually use a regular torch when I'm doing brulees without the Searsol head, and the reason is that brulees don't take on that torch taste that you get when you torch things that have fat or high amount, like meats or things that have proteins in them. And in fact, a torch, a straight naked torch, is a good way to get kind of crunchy sugars. I haven't run the test of different kinds of sugars. I know isomalt crunches up real nice. I know sucrose crunches up real nice, but I haven't tested, for instance, like glucose powder or fructose powder on the top of a creme brulee. So I can't really say, but I doubt it works. You want something that does crystallize nicely. So invert tends not to, so I would choose things like sucrose or isomalt, anything that you would use kind of in a hard candy situation.
You can get a whole range of sugars to test with your Searsol at bobsredmill.com and use the code COOKINGISSUES. That's one word, all caps, COOKINGISSUES, for 25% off your order.
And we're back! We're talking about the worst things we've ever made. We did a birthday cake. We did a birthday cake bourbon once. Remember that? We blended up.
Oh God,
that was delicious.
Like French fry vodka once.
Yeah, oh, that was my fault. That was delicious. Jugo de papas fritas. Yeah. So it was a lifelong dream. Mm-hmm. You can make a good jugo de papas fritas, but it goes like rancid in about a day. That's the problem.
Oh, I milk clarified a bottle of red wine recently, and then brixed it up to 50, and it was terrible. It's gonna be a New York sour. No, it's not.
To be fair. The wine started as terrible.
It's true. It's trash wine to begin with.
You would not drink the wine, so why would you think that as a product it would be good?
I didn't want to use good wine and potentially ruin it, but you're correct. You're absolutely correct, and I was a fool.
Yeah.
Fool.
So what else were we talking about? Milk washing. We were talking about, during the break, we were talking about things we've milk washed and things we've made. Stacey was saying we did a candy corn cocktail once.
Yeah.
Not on the menu. That's the kind of crap that would never go on the menu.
It was on the menu, but it was only there for a couple of days. It was like Halloween weekend.
Was I gone?
No, because you came in that day to make it for us.
I made it for you?
Yeah.
Is that for Dave in the booth? Dave in the booth, come get your cocktail. Oh.
I really wanted to find a way to layer it to make it look like an actual candy.
Oh, Nastasia just halved you.
Yeah. Oh, man. Total narc.
He won't be able to operate the phones if he has a full drink. I'm going to take the other half. All right, go so back. So we're layering flavors.
Oh, no. I meant literally layering the cocktail. Oh. I was like, let's layer this kid. I got vetoed on that.
The most unpleasant cocktail word is Pousse Café.
This is delicious.
Pousse Café.
Yeah.
Do you like it, Stas? It's good, right?
No, he's saying it's delicious.
Yeah, but do you like it? Or do you hate that? Nastasia's hater of everything, so if she likes it. If she likes it and it's not rosé champagne, literally, as soon as Nastasia walks in the bar, someone just looks at her, grabs an AP wine glass, and dumps a bunch of rosé bubbly into it.
Yeah, the Stas bucket.
Stas bucket.
Stas bucket.
I just say, Nastasia, would you like a bucket?
Yeah.
It's always yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She never orders anything else. In fact, we're going to have to carry some sort of rosé sparkler just in case Nastasia shows up.
Wait, Dave, have you ever heard of Cointreau buckets?
Ooh, what's this?
So I was hanging out with some Laramie Cointreau people on Saturday, and they taught me about a Cointreau bucket, where basically you take a shot of Cointreau, you light it on fire, you put your hand over the top to seal out the oxygen so the fire goes out, and it suctions to your hand, and then you can shake it up, and then you take the shot. It was delicious.
I know about this. A guy I used to work for at a recording studio claimed he did this to women all the time to impress
women?
Them.
What?
Oh, he did it to himself.
Sorry, he did,
in order to
do it. Okay. Yeah, he did
you
it
light
to
a
himself.
Woman on fire, you throw her in a cup, you put your hand over it.
Very impressed.
To what part of the woman?
Wow. And I don't know, man. You need yourself some new friends, man.
Oof.
Anyway, so do you like we all know that burning liquor is good. We do that all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. We're going to have the Red Hot Pokers at the new joint.
Pokers are back. Yeah.
It's a little late in the season. I thought we'd be open months ago. Anyway, all right. So while you're making the next drink, I will answer a food-related question. This one from... Okay, I love it when people give me the pronunciation of their last name because I can literally just look at it. Look at this. Look at that. Look at that. Meliaranza. This is from Tom Meliaranza. You have to say it really fast. Tom Meliaranza. But it's the Anza. It's the O-N. That's like I just learned that Joaquin Simo's name isn't Joaquin Simo, it's Joaquin Simo.
Oh, wow.
Meliaranza.
It's a game changer.
Meliaranza. Yeah. So this way, this is from Tom. A lot of Mexican sauce recipes, what kind of sauce? A lot of Mexican sauce recipes have you heat a little oil in a pan until the oil is very hot, then dump in the sauce, which is otherwise made, right? It's already a pre-made sauce. Think like an enchilada sauce or something. Usually something tomatillo or tomato-based to quickly reduce, and as the recipe often claims, to sear it. Or a lot of people say they fry it. They're frying the sauce after it's made. Anyway.
Sauce.
This usually results in the sauce violently hissing and spurting, leaving a mess all over the counter, up the walls, on the cook, etc. You ever got boiling sauce in the eye? It sucks. I'll tell you something else. When I was younger, my eyes were fast. My little membranes were quick. Is this a nictitating membrane, your eyelid? Is that what that is? Anyway, so like, it used to close real fast. So I never used to get hit in the eyes. But now that I'm getting older, my reflexes aren't so good.
Blinking issues.
That's why I had to go to the hospital and get like a big piece of metal carved out of my eye instead of just wiping it off my eyelid like when I was young. Anyways, my question is the idea of searing, in big old air quotes, a sauce BS? Is there any reason why the same result could not be achieved by reducing the sauce at a more moderate rate? Thanks, Tom Meliaranza. Okay, so the answer is it is not BS. Here's what. Okay, but it is a pain in the butt, right? Wait, what's going on?
This is a 2.5-year-old martini.
You are.
Yeah, whenever you have a moment, I like to.
Oh, it's so olivey.
Yeah.
It smells super like
it's
olive.
Almost as if it's had an olive in the bottle for 2.5 years.
In fact, this has a history.
That's a dirty martini I could get down on.
There's a particular history to this. We have to
family show.
That's
right.
Because
they're going around.
All right. You taste around for a minute, and then I will talk about the sauce, and you guys can chime in if you have sauce things. So think about it this way. When you're cooking a tomato-based sauce in general, like I've said this many times on the show, but if you come from Boston Italian stock, first of all, it's not – sauce, it's gravy, and it's not pasta, it's macaroni. So it's macaroni and gravy is pasta with tomato sauce. And the worst thing you can do, because you have to cook the gravy for hours and hours, is burn the gravy because it's not fixable. If you burn tomato sauce, it is a non-fixable problem. And what does it tell you, the fact that you can burn tomato sauce? What does it tell you? What is it telling you, people? That it gets above the boiling point, i.e. you're having reactions happening at the bottom of that are high-temperature reactions, right? And it's because it's so thick that it can't get out of the way. It locally dries out, heats way up, and you can get, you know, high-heat flavors. This is the reason why a lot of people take a very non-stick, well-seasoned cast-iron pan and cook down their tomato paste in just give it a little heat in the bottom of a cast iron pan with some oil before they cook it to get a little bit of high temperature action on their tomato paste. I don't do that because I'm lazy, but people totally do that. And so on a thick sauce, yes, you can get those kind of cooked flavors. The trick is to keep moving it around so it doesn't burn, and most of those flavors are going to happen very soon after you add it because you're going to turn it down such that it doesn't burn. Now, your problem with sputtering is you probably have more liquid in it at that point than you want, so it's going to sputter everywhere. And if you have a thick layer of sauce and you heat it up at the bottom and it's thick, like it's tomato, it's got pectin and other stuff in it, you build up bubbles, the bubbles stay underneath, and then it takes a long time for them to erupt because there's no convection. So you locally superheat the sauce, it forms a large bubble, and then that bubble pops at the surface rather violently and shoots hot spurts everywhere, which is why always cover that sucker. Always cover that sucker. What I would do is dump, cover, let it for a little bit, stir it, and then turn it down. That's what I would do. Anyway, so talk more, my clutter. By the way, I told you the day after you started working, I told you, oh my God, I just had to deal with another clutter buck. How many of you are there?
Just me and that person.
Yeah.
I've never heard of another one.
It's like one of the better names, I think. It's one of the better last names.
He killed them all. He killed them all.
Donnie wasn't born, he just was.
I am the ham.
She ran the permissions for whatever library I had to get permission when I did the Liquid Intelligence book to use Ben Franklin's recipe.
In New York?
The Eastern Seaboard, somewhere here on the Eastern Seaboard.
So there's at least four of us then.
All right, cool.
Maybe five. All
right, so talk to me about the martini.
All right, so the martini is dated 5/9, meaning tomorrow, but 2 years ago. So it's 720 something days old, and it spent the first year of its life in my friend's trunk.
Ah,
Rochester. So hot, cold, hot, cold, 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 hot, cold.
So this is like Linny. It's the Linny of
completely. Yeah, it's been in crossing my fridge for 1 year ago, so it's seen every temperature.
Talking to the mic.
You can imagine. Yeah. And it still tastes good. It just has a lot of olive in it.
It does have a lot of olive.
I think it's nice. Hey, we should age them all for 2 years.
And is this actual? This is the actual BDX Nick Bennett spec.
Yeah, this is. Yep. So you can see Jack's handwriting here.
Don't read it.
Don't read it or look at the stick figure. But there's a whole bunch of really great stuff written on there.
Nice.
From the old days. Right?
So Nick, tell them about your martini spec here.
Orange bitters. I don't remember what it is off the top of my head. Beef eater gin. We use Dolan dry.
3/8 stolen dry.
3/8 stolen dry?
Yeah.
But wait, it wasn't a complete half ounce or anything like that. It was, we orange bitters and dilution, and then we let it sit with, in the freezer with a small olive, Castlevania. I can never remember the actual
name. It's not Castlevania.
That's the only one I could ever, it's the only thing
it's
I can ever think
Castle
of.
It's not a Castle Vetrano. It's not a Spanish queen.
It's a Castle Wolfenstein.
Wolfenstein.
They're
out
of the canyons.
It tastes the same as the Spanish queens, but they're just like little teeny tiny ones.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it had to fit in the bottle.
Had to fit in the bottle, yes. Yeah. That was the main point.
Here is said batch spec I have pulled up. It's 350 mls beef eater, 75 mls dry vermouth. This is Dolan. 300 mls water, 10 dashes orange bitters. That yields approximately 5 martinis after we put 150 grams of batch into each bottle with one olive.
That's like a 5-to-1.
Mm. And Nick was like, I'm using beef because you use too much tank, Dave.
And I have the bottle service water. The service recipe here is, it says martini, open bottle and serve.
All right, so some spec questions. Nick from England wrote in and said, "Give me the spec for the hatchback. Give it to me."
Well, one sec. Let me. Find
give it to
it.
Me. Give it to me. That's Karen Jarman's recipe.
I want that too.
And someone else asked for Thundernut spec.
All right. Thundernut is the hardest drink in the world to make. It takes many days, and you absolutely have to have a centrifuge.
I think my second day, I spilled the entire Thundernut down the stairs.
He's walking up the stairs and tripped up the stairs, spilling Thundernut all over.
To be fair, those stairs were terrifying.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Hatchback. Yeah. Hatchback is 1,666 milliliters of water. Amazing. 335 milliliters clarified grapefruit. 335 milliliters simple. 335 milliliters Campari. A liter of tequila of your choice. We ended up using
light.
Yeah. Blanco tequila.
Cimarron, Espolón, Cabeza, similar.
Yeah. 26 drops of saline solution, and then you chill it, force carbonate it, and then top it with a half ounce. Top each 6 ounce pour with a half ounce of clarified lime.
Right, that's a Karen Jarman spec, but she said that she was based that on a drink. Whose drink did she base that on?
Isn't it like a siesta, right?
And whose drink is that?
Katie's.
Oh, all right.
Sounds like a 212.
Yeah, I mean, it was a classic. I think it was originally a modern classic from PDT. The Katie over there, but how did you guys name the hatchback? That was like right before I showed up.
I don't know. So like, what had happened was that
I remember the story, but
I don't. You have to tell me because like we were the opening bar crew, like so Tristan and like the opening crew, we all were like, we need names for these dang drinks, and we just went to a restaurant and just started ordering French fries and booze, and we're like, we're not getting up until we have names for all these drinks, and that's where.
Wait, you're telling me I could have had fries?
I've become cheap in my old age, but I like. Where did the name come from? I didn't remember.
Well, the story that I heard, and Nick, you were there, so you can testify, but apparently you were all sitting around, and you were talking about this Campari and tequila drink,
And somebody was like, well, it's basically like a siesta, like Katie's type siesta. And then Dave or somebody was like, yeah, like Fiesta. And then somebody said, Ford Fiesta. And then somebody said, Hatchback!
That's a win.
For the win. It's a great name. It really is.
For the win. I tell you what, man, like the thing is that there's so many different combinations of spirits out there that people get so bent on where the spec comes from. Now, if you... This is the Negroni problem I was talking to you about, right? So it's like if you start from a... Like this starts from a... The drink that I brought here starts from Sidecar. Because I woke up and... Well, when I say woke up, I mean paid attention when we were in this tasting with Heaven Hill. And I was like, oh, Sidecar, right? So this legitimately to me is a Sidecar variant.
Yeah, absolutely.
But like if you happen to like start with a flavor and arrive at something that is similar to something else but is milk washed, has a bunch of herbs in it, and then does a bunch of other stuff that no one ever did, then is it really a variant on that other drink that you weren't thinking about or not? Like is our saffron Plymouth martini really a tuxedo? No.
It's more of a seersucker soup.
Oh, we should have named it that instead of canary. But canary's a fine.
But as long as you call it something different, then what difference does it make?
It's not the tuxedo, it's a tuxedo build.
Well, no.
I think you just need to like, you know,
it's
sort
upside
of
down.
Pay homage to it if, when you're talking to your guests and be like, this is where the inspiration came from, but...
But that's not where the inspiration came from. That's the thing. It seems such a jag-off move because it's like, well, it's like a tuxedo except for it's got yellow chartreuse in it and freaking saffron that we wrap and infuse. But other than that, exactly the same. And we weren't thinking about the tuxedo when we were making it, and it's an inverse ratio. But other than that, it is a freaking tuxedo, all right?
Do you think if you landed on the planet tomorrow and you didn't have any idea what any classic was and you were giving a whole bunch of spirits and then you started making cocktails with them, do you think that it's possible that you came up with a cocktail that didn't have any sort of precursor to it? You know what I mean?
No.
Like, do you think it would be possible?
No.
If it tasted good, you know? What? Right, so then why are you even stressed about it?
It's not what I stress about is that I think it comes from the Phil Ward potato head theory, is that everyone sees everything as a variant, and I don't think it's helpful from a mental standpoint. What I'm trying to describe to somebody, so in other words, like, even if it's unrelated to a Manhattan, a specific cocktail, oh man, so many fights, but if it drinks like a Manhattan, it's useful for the customer who likes Manhattans because they can hang their hat on what a Manhattan tastes like. Mm-hmm. It's useful for them to know that it's in that ballpark. Mm-hmm. But if you do a bunch of stuff to that drink, even if it is a brown spirit, an herbed wine and some bitters, but it has no taste comparison to a Manhattan, or you've done something weird to it where it doesn't taste like a Manhattan anymore, that's no longer a useful peg for them to hang their hat on, and therefore it doesn't really should fit into what you talk about it.
But I think it can also be, like, when I was bartending, I think something that helped me was realizing that there are these kind of master ratios in a lot of respects. And so that's a great way as a bartender to remember how to make the drink.
Yeah, but that's the thing. So like, but like, at what point is it, even if you start with a basis as a drink and you just mutilate the hell out of it till it's something different, right? Like, yeah. So, oh, well, it's a Manhattan. It's basically neat whiskey. It's basically neat whiskey. And then it needed a little bit of sugar and acid, so I added some vermouth, and then I wanted a little more bitterness, so I added some, you know, bitters. And then, you know, it was a little too strong, so I stirred it, and then I put, like, you know, cherry or a twist in it. So, yeah, it's basically straight whiskey. You know what I mean? It's like, at what point is it not straight whiskey anymore? You know what I'm saying?
Defending the originals or the riffs?
I'm defending everybody. I'm confused.
That's unusual.
I think people who drink at bars, I don't really think they give a rat's behind, to be honest. But I think bartenders, when they're thinking about what they're doing, tend to put too much stock in the precedent of what they're doing and thinking about it that way rather than just thinking about the ratios. And for some things, the ratios are golden because they are, you know what I mean? But other times, I think you can get hampered by thinking of yourself as just building variants. And, you know, from the Booker and Dax perspective, you guys heard me say it a million times, don't start with a different cocktail, start with a flavor that you want. And so I think that, like, thinking of everything as a variant of something else, even though it's a useful starting place because you know these ratios, I would rather you think about the flavor you're trying to achieve, and if that's best achieved through something that's very close to a Manhattan ratio with a, you know, an herbed wine, then, you know, God bless.
Dave,
that's
think that the best thing ratio-wise that you ever forced us to do was the 3/8 measurement, because nobody uses that, but it's such an easy way to visualize that amount of liquid in a jigger rather than, like, fat quarter, scant half, you know, like those words have a meaning, but it's not as precise.
Normal
as
people don't call 3/8?
Nobody does 3/8.
Yeah.
No. It's literally just you, and it's amazing. Yeah. Oh.
Doesn't the penicillin use 3/8?
Does it?
Yeah.
Is it 3/8?
Honey ginger.
Honey ginger.
Like
it's a good drink. Yeah.
But most people just, you know, combine
batch it together and make the honey ginger.
Dave, you want to take one last call?
Sure. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, I thought this show was about food. I had a food question.
Oh, this is Shorty Josh Eden, the chef in Existing Conditions.
What's up, Shorty?
I was curious how we all feel about Krispy Krabs, bacon mayonnaise, and tomatoes.
Well,
softies?
Here's the problem with tomatoes is that soft-shelled crabs and tomatoes, they don't live in the same season.
Soft-shelled crabs are in season.
Right.
They just came into season,
yes.
And tomatoes are kind of always in season somewhere, but we're like a month away from having great tomatoes.
I mean, I'm not gonna let the cat out of the bag at what we're gonna do.
As long as there's a lettuce layer between the tomato and the crab,
I like a hothouse Campari tomato, and everybody
there won't be any bacon on it. It's gonna be a bacon mayonnaise.
Everybody knows my favorite fact about soft shell crabs, right? The fact that
you're breaking up on me.
I think you're breaking up on me. I'm in a studio.
Are you at the bar right now? It sounds like you're at the bar.
We're having like a menu discussion right now.
Right now, this
yeah,
is happening. By the way, people, in case you want to know what like my actual life is like, it's pretty much like this all the time. My favorite thing about soft shell crabs is after you rip their gills out and after you cut their eyes off, they bred themselves.
Oh, yes. I'm going to need to see this technique. I've never seen that.
Of course you have. You make soft shell crabs. Their legs are still going. You throw them in the thing, and they're like, I will help you. Even coat myself.
They bred themselves.
Yeah.
This was ready. I was like, what?
I'm really, truly enjoying that visual. And I wanted to go. I was listening to it for about 30 minutes.
And that, my friends, is why you want sprightly soft shell crabs, not those dead ones that are on the street that have been baking in the freaking sun. You want nice ones that are still moving. When you guys
That's
buy,
correct.
Shorty, when you buy razors, do you sit there and do you flick the muscle
so all that the it, time? You pull on them and they stretch back.
Yeah, and you got to flick the muscle. One. You got to flick the muscle.
That may
muscle,
not have
baby.
Sounded too good Amen. For the radio, but
I'll tell you what's not a family show. Dana Skinner, who could not be here, came up with the all-time bar term.
Oh man, I don't know if we can.
We cannot talk about it.
No. It's a method of expressing just the right amount of grapefruit or orange or lemon oil from a twist.
It's a very small amount,
through,
right?
Yeah,
well,
through slapping. It's a slapping.
It's a certain
technique.
Kind of slap. Certain kind
it's
of
a
slap.
Slap, slap. Tadaguchi once broke a glass using that technique. It was incredible. We both went, whoa!
So,
another good idea last
here,
night,
Todd.
But you're not going to like it either.
All right.
I was thinking about doing carbonated oyster shooters.
No, yeah. Why, though? Why? How about we serve you something carbonated and you have your oyster? First of all,
I'm okay with that. I was just playing around with the idea. I thought it was funny.
I don't know, man. Here's my Shorty. Here's my thing with carbonation.
Oh wow, I got booed.
Not by me. That's Dave in the booth. So like for me, the issue with carbonation with a lot of things is it takes on the note of, unless it's a liquor or a booze, it takes on the note of spoilage. So like back like 10, 15 years ago when everybody was carbonating fruit, I was like, bad idea, because when you start eating fruit and the fruit's carbonated, you're like, that fruit's gone south. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not good anymore.
It's
that fermenty.
I have a specific question for Jack.
Yes.
Hold on one moment.
Uh-oh.
Oh, God.
This is actually a two-part question. Acid Grapefruit is not clarified, correct?
This is
not
Bobby, clarified. This is Bobby Murphy.
This is Bobby Murphy, a.k.a. Vinny Barbarino, a.k.a. my cousin Vinny Barbarino, a.k.a. Bobby.
Formerly Next, Bobby formerly Alinea, formerly...
Yeah.
And I went to middle school with Bobby.
Yeah,
hi, Bobby.
Steakbone and Bobby have known each other forever.
He was way cooler than me when he was a year younger. Not fair.
Going for the olders.
Bobby, sorry, what's part two?
Do you want the Kin fried chicken lunch special?
Yes, yes, 1,000,000%. You can tell they're at the bar because you can hear...
We're probably going to have to go here pretty soon as construction is resuming.
Yeah, all right.
Here in the neighborhood. Thank you for taking our call.
Of course.
Thank you, Shorty.
Love you guys. We'll see you soon.
All right. So,
did you answer Bobby's question?
What?
Yeah, yeah.
I told the people we have a tasting today. They called into the radio show.
Acid grapefruit is not clarified, and yes, I would like fried chicken.
Listen, Bobby, it's very simple. Is the drink going to get shaken? If so, do not clarify. Are you going to shake? Do not clarify. That's one of the great things about this drink here is that there's nothing. It's double citrus.
If you will shake, it is opaque.
There's.
I stole that from Kevin Denton. But.
Okay, you're gonna get a reaction from us on that one. Boom.
All right, that's
please,
fair.
Please. But like that's why I like this this fake sidecar. This fake sidecar, it's got over an ounce of citrus in it, so it's textured up the wazoo.
Is it a sidecar?
Yeah. Oh, Donnie.
I started with the concept
of the sidecar. That's what I'm trying to say. I started with the sidecar and I ended up here. Started with the sidecar, now we're here.
All right.
Okay, well, enjoy the rest of the show.
Well, it's over
now. Thanks again for taking the call.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
This is the kind of arguments we have constantly at the bar. Like, we're like, someone has an idea, and then everyone else is like, no! You know what I mean? And then, like, until we have a... You know what I mean? It's like...
All right, we got to get out of here.
All right, listen, I want to thank BDX Crew, the best crew anyone could ever ask for. I love all you guys.
Oh, I promise this. Shout outs to Max Brzezowski, barback extraordinaire.
Oh, yeah.
He couldn't be here, but we love him.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks. Thanks for coming, and I hope to see you guys at the new place. You're always family. Thanks.
Couldn't believe it.
Thank you, Dave.
All right.
Thanks, Dave.
Cooking issues.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.